Oi, lads, did you miss out on the Jaren's Outpost Kickstarter and wish you weren't such a big doofus? Well, fear not. Late pledges are now open and they'll be open for a little while. So just head to Kickstarter, search for D&Ds for Nerds or Jaren's Outpost and slam that late pledge button.
You're listening to the Sans Pants Network.
Although you see no water for miles around, you are nonetheless marooned, stranded in a nightmare your people call Barovia. While I am able to travel easily between the plains, you cannot, and as such, you find Baron von Strahd your jailer. There is no escape unless I, a Gogash the Mighty, can defeat him.
All right, Hector's left at this point.
Hector is, yeah.
Yeah, because I would have beelined it. Well, how far?
You would have had enough of a, what were you doing at the Blue Water Inn again?
I was just dropping off the dog.
Yes, that would have been quite quick.
Yeah, yeah. And then me and I guess Cribbit would have gone to the orphanage.
Yeah, you will be arriving at the orphanage at about 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that you, Pip, arrive at the Blue Water Inn at about 2.
Okay.
So Hector has well and truly left at this point. You come in and you see.
How busy is it?
At about 2, it'd still be quite quiet. You can see the two boys playing with the dog. You can see, I would say it's switched over to Danica at this point. Danica is operating behind the bar. There's a book open in front of her, and she's doing bookkeeping.
Maybe we catch eyes, just you know. And I like try and give her a look like, I'm doing it. I'm looking for the mass or whatever.
She maybe gestures for you to come over.
I like give a wave to a Gogash and Chaucer to be like, just sit down.
They grab a seat, and one of the boys comes over and asks them if they need anything.
Pretty sure I figured out what it is, Danica. I think it's a dark mass, comma watery, or watery, comma dark mass.
Whatever. I have never heard of this creature.
I sort of like a. Imagine
if you are confident what it is, then that is what it is.
Well, it's no All small right. feat to
well
eliminate it, but I'll try.
Eliminate it.
Is that not what the end goal was here?
Oh. I had not expected that you would. You do not have to.
Well, Danny, I know. Perhaps that wasn't the original deal, but I think. I don't think I could really live with myself if I let it. I think it's only going to get worse. Someone's going to have to take care of it.
An eye raises and she asks you, is it dangerous? And you get the impression that she thinks quite low of you.
Mm.
And she's asking because you get the impression that she's thinking, oh, it's not that big a deal. He's going to deal with it.
I take out Emmanuel the Monster and I flip it around to show her the dark mask come a watery, and maybe next to it, next to each entry in Emmanuel the Monster, there's like a little smiley face to show how difficult it is. And maybe next to dark mask come a watery, it's like a really angry, unhappy smiley face. I just don't know if there's anybody out there that has my level of experience. I don't think I'd trust anybody else with it.
She sits with that for a moment, and once again, you can see, well, not once again, sorry. For the first time, you can see that her emotion changes a little bit, and you see, you obviously knew Danica more than a year ago, and you have come here with Keening, and she has seemed to you warmer and more, having more faith.
I imagine there was a point of time where me and Danica were almost what you might call friends.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You could see, when she looks up at you, something behind those eyes has like a spark of that old familiarity. And when she starts speaking, it sounds like, and it looks like you, for a brief moment, she believes to herself that you could be someone that she could call friend once more.
A very tight-lipped smile on my face, and also very brief. I think there's a lot I got to make up for, so I'll close Emmanuel the Monster.
Sometimes, Pip, obviously I have lived here my entire life, as all Barovians and Valakavians and Krezikins have. It is easy to think of Strahd as a force of nature rather than a man. And when you think of Strahd as a force of nature rather than a man, you shift blame, perhaps unfairly, she says.
I give her like an understanding smile, but like maybe Pip can't even really bring himself to respond. But it gives her an understanding smile. Maybe I put my hand on the on the bar top or whatever. Thanks, Danny. All right. I'm going to turn around to Agogash and Chorza.
Agogash sets down. He'd been drinking from a tankard. He sets that down, stands up, and says, he can kind of tell the vibe of the bar right now. And he says, Chaucer, perhaps it would be safer for you to stay here with the children and the dog. Chaucer, who you've noticed has been speaking to the boy who was still playing with the dog, and the boy seems to be in rapt attention of Chaucer. Chaucer kind of like half-heartedly turns around and just like nods and says, yes, of course.
Fantastic.
And he turns back. He seems engaged with the boy who was engaged with him.
Great. Good. I'd like to, maybe Agogash, is he standing to leave?
Agogash is standing to join you, yes.
Okay, fantastic. I'm not going anywhere.
We've
got a whole mess of things to figure out, Agogash, before we start making any dangerous movement or we start taking any next step of action. I slam Emmanuel de Monster down on the table and I say, IDATHAM. There's an acronym that I always follow when I'm hunting any monster. Identify the monster, decide a price, assess situation, track the monster, hunt the monster, accept payment, move on. And we're in the assess situation period right now, Agogash, so let's assess it.
Agogash resumes his seat and says, then let us assess. Hector, you are striding confidently and with Cribbit the Amazing in tow towards the Saint. It's pretty obvious, actually. You would find it easily enough. It's on the main street. You are striding with confidence and purpose towards St. Andrel's Orphanage. It's a three-story building, and there's a massive sign out the front that obviously proclaims it to be St. Andrel's. And then in addition to that, you could see around the back there is a garden or a yard sort of area. It's hard to tell, though, because it's obscured mostly by the house itself. You see a large, obvious front door, and you can hear, as you approach, children playing in the back.
Okay. Can I hear Yenda at all? Or do I even see,
Yenda's not here.
Okay, it's been a while. I did say I'd meet up in a couple of hours.
You are 4 hours day. Late.
I'm a bit late.
I'll head towards the
front door.
Okay.
And, is there like something to knock on?
A grand oak door with a big brass knocker faces you as you approach. You can't hear anything inside the building. All noises appear to be coming from the back of the building.
I'll just knock and wait maybe a minute. And
there's some stained glass windows to both your left and right hand side. The stained glass doesn't appear to depict anything. It's just pretty patterns, basically. You can see on your right hand side, it's a big bay window as well, but with stained glass. You can see through the bay window that there are two figures inside that room. One of them, a taller one, stands up and you hear click clacking of either heels or hooves approaching the front door. The front door opens and you stare into the face of a very tall and stern-looking female tiefling.
So sad you weren't like a very tall and stern-looking horse.
Good afternoon. I'm looking for Yenda. She's a halfling. I was meant to meet her here several hours ago.
The woman nods slowly. I am headmistress Claudia Belasco.
Nice to meet you,
Yenda,
Claudia.
Yenda is through here, she says. She gestures with her hand.
I'm Hector, and this is my good friend, Cribbit.
Hello, this one is what he means when he says Cribbit.
Okay, Cribbit. Sure.
You step into the entry hallway. There are some more doors here, a set of stairs, but you immediately go right following Claudia, and you enter into Claudia's office. Well, what you can only assume is Claudia's office. The door from the hallway leading into this room bears a plaque with her name, Headmistress Claudia Belasco, and the room itself appears to be a relatively modest office, featuring a desk set in front of an aged fireplace, bookshelves lining the north wall, with mostly official documents and volumes inside. It doesn't look like any sort of reading material. It looks like paperwork and bookkeeping.
Okay.
She sits down behind the desk, and you can see sitting at one of the chairs is Yenda. Yenda looks at you with like a questioning look. Like I said, you're 4 hours late.
so sorry, Yenda. We've had a very busy morning.
Claudia gestures to the seat and interrupts you, saying, she speaks as well, I didn't mention this, but she speaks with all the authority of a headmistress, regardless of who she is addressing.
Okay.
So she's speaking to you, she's still speaking you're her student.
Okay, so when she was like, come on in, it was a very clip thing.
Yeah.
And would I, is it the aura that she was giving? Because if there was an aura, I just don't think I would have said anything.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And when she gestured to the chair, she would have just said, sit.
Oh, that would have sat. And maybe looked and given a more of a like, sorry, look to Yenda as opposed to saying anything.
There is a cup of tea in front of Yenda, which you can see she is drinking from, and some biscuits set on the desk as well.
Barovian biscuits.
You can't tell if this is a Barovia thing or a headmistress Claudia Belasco thing, but either way, the biscuits do not look, or if you try them, taste very appealing.
I imagine they're really hard for some reason.
Literally hard tack, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, considering the last time I almost tried, so was made to have some tea. I'm not drinking or eating anything.
Well, Belasco doesn't offer, so you're fine.
Great news for this one. All right, I sit down.
Your
wait to be addressed.
Your companion, Yenda, has informed me of your reason for being here, and I have been explaining to her for some time now, she says, with an obvious hint towards Yenda not sharing your deference towards her as a headmistress. You can see, in fact, Headmistress Belasco has kind of a throbbing vein in her forehead, and Yenda actually seems quite relaxed, but you could see this is her element. Yenda thrives in a I am inferior to you, but I am not letting you get your way sort of environment.
Okay.
I hope you have come here to extract your companion, if I'm being honest.
Right.
Belasco says.
Yes. So very sorry.
Yenda takes another sip from her tea, and you now realize that Belasco doesn't have a cup of tea.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, first off, I just want to apologize. I got held up at a blacksmith. So I'm sure Yenda has already mentioned that we just want to have a conversation to Jeska about something that went missing where his father was apprenticing for.
I am here to inform you that Jeska is not to be spoken with. The child has just recently lost his father.
Oh, of course.
And in addition to that, we have had... it's not important, but...
What have you had?
Maybe it's like Yenda has been the bad cop wearing the headmistress down so that you, the good cop, could come in as the soothing balm. You see that within the headmistress's eyes, it's like she had a thick hide for this. She did not want to say anything. But then Yenda has been, like with a plane or whatever, just slowly filleting away piece by piece this fucking armor until you come along as literally the last straw slowly falling down upon the wound. And when you touch it, it cracks. You do not need to push hard. You just were the straw that broke the fucking camel's back.
Just a very gentle, very earnest, very honest, oh no, what happened?
Yeah, that's enough. Sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah.
The headmistress stands up, and you can see when she puts a hand to her head and pushes at, she kind of like fixes her bun. You can see several hairs. She wears her hair in a tight bun. Several of her hairs have come loose. She pushes some of them back into the bun and turns away from you. And with exhaustion, incredible heavy exhaustion in her voice, she says, there have been several incidents of late.
What do you mean by incidents? Children playing up or...
Well, several of the children have been roughhousing. There's always, in an orphanage, it is not uncommon for children to come here with baggage, she says. And when she says baggage, you can tell there's like another heaviness to her voice. And this is the first time. When you cracked open for this part of the conversation, you also cracked open and you can see that there is a deep welling sadness for these children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you can tell that she feels awful. She, not that she's done something too awful to them. It's like her heart bleeds for these children.
Very,
for
sure, very empathetic.
Yeah.
Is if she's, does she leave any moment of like, you know, to interject, or is it very much like she's going to continue talking?
She is probably going to continue talking.
Yep. Again, she's like, look, she might be very empathetic and very being very open and honest, but she's still a headmistress, and I don't want to get my knuckles wrapped.
Yeah, fair.
They have been, like I said, roughhousing to an unnatural degree, and spates of violent actions have become, well, spates of violent actions have started happening. They've become very awful, cruel even towards each other. Jeska is, I would say, most often an instigator and among the first that this has happened to. But it's, I don't know, it's like a disease that has been spreading through them.
And this only happened when Jeska came to the orphanage?
No, it predates Jeska. Jeska came here when his father passed, but it was like, it was like he already had this rot within him.
Right, and whatever it was that was here perhaps saw the... I mean, he was very... I mean, probably very angry at the church and... Okay, yes, so he was... Right, yes. So he's been acting up and...
You've been here for long enough now that you can... The children playing has been in the background pretty constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can hear... You're getting it better filtered to you. You can hear that there is, it's not just the sounds of playing. Every now and then you can hear the sounds of a fight happening.
Okay.
As the kids kind of start roughhousing with each other. And maybe you can also hear distantly, presumably a teacher or some authority figure breaking it up.
Yes.
But beyond that as well, you can hear a nursery rhyme being sung.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's never good, Adam.
You maybe know this nursery rhyme. It's quite a common one.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Robin, but this is not the version that you know. This is a much gorier, much more violent version of it that, thinking back, you vaguely remember one kid one time when you were growing up, you remember one kid singing the song one time and then being told off about it. And that's mm-hmm. kind of it. So you know this is a version, but it is an on-purpose, awful, gory version that is really not encouraged. Who killed Cock Robin? I said the sparrow. With my bow and arrow, I killed Cock Robin. Who saw him die? I said the fly. With my teeny eye, I saw him die. Who caught his blood? I said the duck. It was just my luck. I caught his blood. Who'll make the shroud? I said the beetle with my thread and needle. And then the song just continues. It's so this version, typically, this nursery rhyme, is just a pleasant mm-hmm. rhyme about a little bird.
Mm-hmm.
But this version is the robin dies, and then it goes through the... in a very gory detail, it goes through the preparation for a funeral for the,
yeah,
for the robin.
Right. Okay. I just like, my ears sort of like prick up and having noticed that. Have they always sung that version of the robin?
The headmistress turns and you can see that she casts a very weary, sad eye towards the back of the building and she shakes her head. They know the robin. I don't know where they learnt this version of it.
Hmm. Okay.
Jeska, I have spoken to him previously. We can bring him in now if you must. I insist. She turns to look at the two of you. I insist on being here to witness this interrogation.
Yes, of course.
Hector, once again, you can see that so mm-hmm. you are quite used to, in some places you go, being respected and hailed and doors are opened to you because you are a member of the clergy. And
yep.
as such, people see you as a liberator and as a savior. It's not as common, but you mm-hmm. have seen this happen before. Sometimes when you go to extremely troublesome places, extremely war-torn places, or sometimes places kind of like Barovia where people's attachment to the gods is a lot thinner.
Mm.
People see intrusions of the clergy as kind of just bringing trouble. And you could see that the headmistress, she sees you more as trouble than as helpful.
But of course, if you want, you can ask the questions. We're just simply asking if if he knows anything about the missing. I look at like Yenda to see sort of what they may have already said, but I'm like, the missing item, and if they did, where is it now, or who has it? And another question, sorry, do you remember who was the most or who was the first person to be afflicted, as it were?
Yes, I would say that I do. This all began with Miliov.
Miliov. And who were Miliov's parents?
He was abandoned.
Abandoned. And do you know who they were?
No, before? No, we don't know. He was simply dumped on our doorstep.
About a year ago?
No, he's been here longer than that.
Okay.
Why do you say a year ago? She says, she looks up at you, and you can see that she thinks there's something suspicious about a year ago, just as you might think that there's something suspicious about a year ago, and you think that she knows something happened a year ago.
Well, it's just in the brief time that I have been in Valakai, and even briefer time that I've been in Barovia, things have seemed to have gotten worse after, I guess the uprising.
The headmistress gives you like a very dark look, and she says, yes, something did happen a year ago. 1 year ago, almost to the day, there was, as you said, an uprising. And I have some magical aptitude. A very charming man came to this town, and he began recruiting for this uprising. And I found myself, I wanted a better future for them, she says, gesturing towards the back of the building. And while I did survive, I fear that I was allowed to survive. And I was allowed to survive such that I might suffer, such that I might watch as everything I care about is corrupted.
You were there?
Yes, I was there by his side, General Mandarin. For the first time, Yenda also stiffens. You see that she sits forward a little in her seat. And, I mean, Yenda already kind of knew.
Pip, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Yenda now has, like, added. She just came from Barovia, shit's going down.
Yeah.
I did not realize that there were many survivors of the people that were there.
There were a handful. I know several of them have seen repercussions already. But yes. He sat about a year ago, in your very seat, actually.
And so Miliov, he was here before the uprising.
Miliov, yes, was here
and
before.
Was the incident happening before?
Or? Nothing before I left happened, but after I came back, things started happening. My understanding is that Miliov and Yeska work together at the church. And I have seen them before Yeska's father passed. I had seen them talking some together. I thought Miliov was simply, as an older boy, was simply looking after Yeska. But perhaps, I don't know. I don't know what's happening and I don't know what's happened.
Would you say that when you came back, the incidents, they've been more supernatural more supernatural in nature, or are they more... Just
my magical aptitude does not come from knowledge. It comes from innate power. I know little of it.
Okay. Yes. Look, if you could speak to Yeska, or if we could speak to Yeska, I would fetch him.
Wait here.
Thank you so much. I want to start scanning the room when she leaves.
Okay.
And the moment she leaves, I would like to once again cast Divine Sense.
Nice.
Okay. So this is not something that typically Divine Sense would pick up on, but mechanics-wise, Divine Sense should not be picking up on this. Divine Sense mechanically finds celestials, demons, devils, undead. But lore-wise, Divine Sense can pick up many auras of good and evil. And you see, hanging all around this building, a evil aura. It sticks to the floor like a mist. It is thick all over the place. It's got an awful green tinge to it, and mm-hmm. you can see that it is otherworldly in nature, though you are unable to divine specifically what sort of otherworldly. All that you know is there is the energy, the aura of an entity from another place here. It is evil, it is vile, but you would identify it is not demonic. It is not from hell or the abyss. It's not a devil or a demon, and it's not undead either. It's something else entirely. Also, when you cast Divine Sense, it piques Cribbit's interest. He looks at you and says, "Ooh, you learn things." He opens his book, you hear it crack open, and then he begins scribbling furiously.
Not a demon, not a devil. It is not undead. Okay, I would be like maybe scanning.
It's obviously not an angel as well.
Whoa!
Maybe just scanning, like looking like bug-eyed, basically. And
Yender nods slowly. I see it so too.
You've been initially. I thought this might have been maybe related to the potentially the what they're doing with the cult, the king of tongues. But I do not think it is.
You
this.
What, mate?
There's. There's a lot we need to.
Day, Yanda. Okay.
It's been. Initially,
who needs to speak to the bloody king of tongues? She stops herself and she's yelling it previously, but then she stops herself and kind of whispers, hisses it at you. Who needs to speak to the bloody king of tongues?
It seems to be well, the burgomaster of this whole place.
The burgomaster of this fucking place can speak to the king of tongues.
No, they're trying to summon the king of tongues because they need to speak to. I just write the name down.
You get half of the name out and she stops you. Don't fucking write it out.
So they need to summon him, and then because they're very close.
He's fucking here. says.
I'm like nodding and I'm like, I think the only thing.
Wait. Do you mean like Barovia or do you mean fucking Valakai?
I do not know. All I know is that.
Losing her mind. It's
just nice to know. There's almost like a shorthand here between two, I guess, clerics. Be like, yes, and I do not know.
Oh, Virgin Master's got to fucking die.
yes. That is the current plan. So I was here to grab you, see what's going on.
We got to cut. Then, she starts getting up. We can't stay here. This rot needs to be fucking cut out.
Yes, but is this related? I don't know. I was thinking
she looks around.
Initially this might be related because the people that the people who are getting brainwashed, I think that they are sort of related in a weird way to the let's say him. So that in a weird way it is him, but I don't know if this is related to that because if we were to get the artifact,
yeah,
that might help us.
Wait, which artifact do you mean?
The one that the Jeska stole.
Oh, you mean the
bones?
Saint Andrew's bones.
Yes, that's the only other
thing. Well, yeah. Yes. The church used to be a fucking. Did we explain this yesterday? The church is a safe place.
It's a
but
safe
only
safe
with
place.
Consecrated
with the
bones.
There. So if we can get the bones, perhaps we can use them to, you know, stop him and the King of Town or whatever that is going on there.
I mean, and then we can kill the Burgomaster.
yes, that is not, up for debate.
All right, fuck.
We'll just get...
Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to stay here? Do you want to? Because how close were they to fucking summoning the King of Tongues?
They got of tongues, and we've tried. Pip is there now. He's wiping off.
They got two of the fucking three words.
They got two of the three words.
How many tongues?
I want to be like because we can't. I didn't.
Did
count
you burn
them.
The fucking site down?
Pip is there. Was scrubbing off the.
That's not gonna fucking do.
It's in the middle of the market. I didn't want to burn down a place in the middle of a market.
She puts her head in her hands,
as you can see. But we burnt the tongues, and we've Pip is scrubbing off the.
Well, you burnt the tongues. That doesn't matter anymore. Those tongues have bled dry. Oh. They need new tongues anyway. All we need to do is get rid of all the tongues, she says sarcastically.
I'm sorry, I didn't. I just. I. You...
No, it's fine. It's not your fault. I'm sorry. This is big. She says.
I start nodding because I'm like, I think the only thing keeping him here is perhaps, and I do the gesture for Strahd.
Yeah.
So
cool.
If you see the predicament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we just very quickly see what this boy has to say?
The door opens and the headmistress returns with Jeska. When that happens, you also spot, because you're turning around to just look in the right direction, Cribbit, who is this entire time has been standing in the corner. You can see after your conversation with Yenda, there is smoke coming off the pages of Cribbit's book.
He's going to start a little fire.
Jeska walks up to the table and stands in such a manner that you can tell he presumably has very quickly become used to being called before the headmistress and standing here to be told off. She sits behind the desk and she says, Jeska, dear, I would like you to... These are Hector and Yenda. They are... She looks at each of you and you can see mentally she's about to say they're with the church, but then she just doesn't finish the sentence.
Fair enough.
Yep, that makes sense. Go.
They are here. And we have a few questions for you, Jeska. First off, I wanted to ask you, I've noticed that you've been speaking with the boy, Miliov. She looks at both of you just to make sure that you know, who is also a student here. And I just wanted to know, has Miliov said or done anything recently that you think might be naughty behavior, misbehaving? Has he done anything? Have you seen anything? Jeska blows a big raspberry in her face.
This kid's cool.
The headmistress stops, and you can see, like, just she swallows some anger, and she begins questioning Jeska. You see that she is way more delicate with Jeska than she has been with you or Yenda.
So when they came in, because I'm assuming they... Do I notice that mist?
Yeah.
Is it clinging to her at all? And is it clinging to the boy?
It does not cling to her. It kind of parts as she walks, like she's she's Moses. However, the boy, it is clinging to him. It's not coming from him, but you can see that it seems to like him and it's grabbing onto him.
Is it kind of like, is it sort of like, you know, is it going into his nose, mouth, ears, kind of any kind of like, you know, place where it could actually like say almost possess him or like enter his body as it were?
It doesn't seem
or is
like a
kind
possession.
Of
no.
Around him.
No.
Is that like on his body kind of thing or is it more just sort of like, I like you?
It just seems to like him, yeah. It doesn't seem to be, I mean, it's not like it isn't passing through him, but it doesn't seem like possession entering him. It seems like it likes him. Actually, you would notice, if you've got your divine sense up, the headmistress continues to ask questions of him, and he keeps giving very rude or mean answers. Sometimes he outright calls her names. He calls her really awful things, calls her like a bitch, that sort of stuff. He doesn't get aggressive or he doesn't get violent. He does get aggressive. Mm-hmm. But anytime he has that sort of a response, you can see that the mist seems to latch onto him even tighter. More of it comes towards him. It seems to really like it when he's acting up and being naughty. You can see the headmistress almost physically becomes smaller. She seems paler, weaker. It really looks like she is dying inside that Jeska is being so awful. And when that happens, you can see that it stops receding around her and kind of approaches her.
Okay, so it's kind of like almost sucking hope.
A little bit, yeah.
Is it similar? I guess I'm like, it's similar to that inky black in a way of how with the sort of... can I?
Mm-hmm.
If they're sort of getting nowhere, maybe just interject. I'm like... Excuse me, sorry. It seems...
The headmistress...
I don't want to interrupt her so much because she's also... I don't want to get... I also maybe just wait until either she's either done or at least there might be a lull where I could interject.
All right. That would probably happen, but the second you try to interject, the headmistress looks at you and... You thought she was angry before, but when she looks at you, it's like she wants to strike you. And then she slams the table in front of you. Yender also jumps. You see that is shocked Yender as well. When that happens, you can see that the mist begins to start clinging to the headmistress as well. But after she slams the table in front of you, there's a brief pregnant pause, and then she It's like something else came over her. She shakes her head. The mist once again recedes from her. And looking at you, she says, I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from.
Maybe under my breath. I'm like, I think I do. Sorry, if I could have a very quick moment with the boy.
Headmistress stands up. She seems very preoccupied. What she just did to you seems to have upset her. She walks, she nods and says, I'm going to make myself a cup of tea. And then she walks out of the room.
I want to sort of like kneel down so sort of eye level with Jeska.
Jeska, yeah.
Jeska, so your father used to work for the church, yes?
He spits in your face.
This wasn't very nice. That is okay. You're angry, I can see that.
He turns around and maybe is going to leave.
Perfect. I grab his shoulder.
Uh-huh.
I cast Protection from Evil and Good.
Oh, that's a cool move.
All right. Penia, with her hands on your shoulders, you can see with Herculean effort, that's funny, he's only half a god, with Herculean effort, she is able to channel energy into you from her. It feels like she physically becomes lighter and wispier behind you, but you cast Protection from Good and Evil upon Jeska, and you see the mist recede from him quickly. Have you ever seen a drop of soap being soapy water being put into like
oil?
Food dye?
Yeah.
You've seen how it like just explosively almost recedes away. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what the mist does. It recedes away from Jeska really powerfully, really quickly, and Jeska turns around and you can see it's like something's been lifted off him.
Are you okay, Jeska?
He looks around.
It is okay.
He
it
starts
is okay.
Crying.
It is okay. I just bring him in for a hug. I can't not.
Yeah, fair enough.
My Zammit might cry. I don't know. Come here.
Into your chest, you don't hear. It's like you feel the vibrations of his words. You hear him wail into your chest, Papa.
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm so sorry that you have lost your father. I'm so very sorry. Now, do you know what happened to the thing under the altar in Papa's church?
Miliov has it.
Miliov has it. Thank you very much, Jeska. You're so very brave. You're being so very brave. Are you? I just hold him. I just hold him and let him.
Like, he continues to cry and cry and cry and cry. After a few minutes, the headmistress comes back with that cup of tea. She sees what's happening, and you see that she begins weeping as well. She's very silently just standing in the corner watching you weep. Yendra puts a hand on Jeska's shoulder, but then she looks at you with a very comforting gaze. Hector, you are looking into Yendra's face, and you see that she weeps for the hopelessness and the trials, the tribulations, the horrors of this world. And you see that her tears are Penia's tears. And if you were not crying before, you are crying now. It moves you to your very soul.
Okay.
You can see Cribbit is also crying, and he kind of says, mostly to himself, I could never create such a sad story. He, looking at you, you see, like, admiration in his face.
Maybe looking up at the headmistress, there is something here that is definitely affecting everybody, and right now it is not affecting Jeska, but that will not last for a while. If it is okay with you, could I perhaps take him to the church?
She nods. She stands aside and lets you walk out with Jeska.
I pick him up, kind of just carrying him.
Okay.
And then I'm just like, we will be back later to deal with everything else, if this is okay with you.
She nods. She doesn't say anything. She's just quietly crying.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We start walking out and make a beeline.
The mist does not want to touch you, or you've now noticed as well, yet when Yendra moves, it recedes from her as well. It actually makes a bigger berth for her than anyone else. Even with the protection from good and evil, it seems literally afraid of Yendra.
Interesting. All right. I'll store that in the old noggin. Okay.
Then when you leave the orphanage, it's no longer, it's just kind of clinging to the orphanage itself. It comes out of it like in waves, like it's water that is gushing out of every tap and force it, it falls out of the windows and pulls around the orphanage. You leaving
still,
into the distance.
Still holding Yaska, I'll mention to Yenda. I'll say to Yenda, okay, we need to, I guess, drop off Yaska to the church, to the father. See if he can just care for him for the night or something. And to make sure that he does not get swept back up in Miliov and all of that. And we can deal with this maybe tomorrow. But right now, I think we both know that we have bigger fish to fry.
Yender nods and just moves with you. Maybe actually she gestures to hold the boy.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, she's so little.
Yeah.
Give the boy.
She whispers something to Yeska, and he shakily stands up, and holding hands, they walk together.
Oh, that's nice.
I guess as we're seeing Yeska holding Yenda's hand, I might just quickly, because his father was an
apprentice.
Apprentice, yeah. Right? He probably doesn't have the best association with the church.
Potentially not.
It's true.
Yenda, perhaps it might be best if we all head to the Blue Water Inn.
Yenda considers it and then says, well, it's not like there's any protection at the church right now, I suppose.
Yeah, that is a good point.
As it's no longer a consecrated place, there's not like,
yes,
if a demon shows up or something like that, it's just going to kill the priest and,
hey, yes,
and the boy.
Yeska, do you like dogs?
Yeska is, no, he's calmed down a bit. Yender, you can see, is just, as with adults, men, women, anything besides
breathe, really.
Yeah, just people who are capable of hearing. She just has a way with kids.
Yeah.
And Yender has quite calmed down since being at the orphanage. You can tell that something has been blocking his ability to mourn. And so it is everything that has happened to him recently. It's all coming out now. But with Yender at his side, there's something bolstering him, and he is able to answer, which he would not normally be able to do. And he nods and says, yes.
I know a dog that could really use some friendship right now. Well, let's head to the Blue Water Inn.
As you walk away from the orphanage, you can hear distantly, I'll carry the coffin. Who'll bear the pall? I said the crow. I'll bear the pall. Pip.
Yeah.
You and a Gogash are sitting at a table.
Yeah. Oh, damn, we are.
Yeah, I know. Action City.
Yeah. I've given him the lay of the situation, I think, already. Maybe I've drawn as I have in real life, a little kind of a map of the various relationships of everyone in town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so me and Hector made the mistake of getting involved in small town politics, and the end result is,
ah, yes, small town politics.
Yeah,
he's
never
says.
Smart.
He seems to know exactly what you mean.
And so the end result is that we might have to, look around the tavern. Is it just us?
No, it's getting on. So there's a few more people.
Well,
now.
Then maybe I lean in conspiratorially and I put my hand. It's so funny, you know, like you put your hand over your mouth so no one can hear you. But as a dragonborn, I got to put it up the end of my snout. Kill the burgomaster, I say.
Gogash gets a very serious expression. He knows the weight of what you're planning.
Yeah.
And he, looking back at you, says in a similarly hushed tone, Chauncer and I, we are past the Burgomaster's mansion. I would not describe it as a fortress, but it is not going to be easy.
Yeah. I mean, morally, it won't weigh on my soul. The Burgomaster's a sort of piece of shit, so it's look, in terms of practicality, it's going to be, and then in terms of consequences, I mean, who knows, but in terms of priority, I think that's where we need to begin. Also, maybe I would have actually already explained this, that the cult, and therefore very possibly the town guard, are hunting us. Or at least we're kind of wanted criminals, but then maybe I'd be like, but also, like, a good portion of the town guard are sort of enslaved by the watery mess. So those ones, I mean, it's so messy.
The door opens and a man steps in. You see, he's not actually stepping into the building. He just opens the door and steps halfway through. So he's got one foot outside, one foot inside.
Uh-oh.
He looks across the bar at Danica. Danica looks at him. He nods, and Pip, you see he puts up four fingers as a quite obvious gesture to Danica.
Okay.
Then Danica goes a little pale, nods back at him, and he closes the door. Danica looks at you, Pip. Have you made any enemies today?
Danica, I hate to say it, but yes, a couple.
Come, she says.
I like Jessica Gogash to stand up as well.
All right, you both get up.
I'll pick up Chaucer, I guess.
And as you're approaching the bar, Danica points at a Gogash and says, him too?
No, actually, no.
You, sit
right?
down.
With... I talk to a Gogash.
A Gogash nods.
Okay, yeah, no, not him.
You too, sit down at the bar. They maybe sit down facing away from the door, sitting at the bar. Mm-hmm. Danica leads you into the back of the Blue Water Inn. You've probably never been here.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just kind of a kitchen slash where they store some stuff area. She opens a trap door and you can see a little crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the crawl space, there is some more storage in there. I should say, actually, no, more than just opening a trap door. She pulls a rug aside. Underneath, there is a trap door that mm-hmm. is sitting perfectly flush. You wouldn't have spotted it if not for the fact that Danica reaches up her sleeve, pulls out a key, inserts it into what you thought was just a gap in the wood,
mm-hmm.
but then unlocks it, opens a extra crawl space, and she gestures for you to get in there.
I like start climbing down, and I'm like, Hector too, and Cribbit, the frog.
Danica nods and says, just remain quiet. I will deal with this.
Okay.
She closes it and presumably puts the rug back in place. You can hear, this is kind of, this crawl space is the entirety of the bottom floor. So mm-hmm. you could be under anywhere you wanted to right now, but you are in complete darkness right
now.
Can
I hear well enough what's happening in the bar?
Yeah, you can. You've got to strain your ears, but you can kind of hear.
It's probably better to not move than sure. to crawl underneath and make myself known.
Danica, you hear, returns to the bar. As you can see, actually, maybe there is a slight little bit of light, like yeah. little filtered pieces of light here and there
yeah,
from
sure.
cracks
through the floorboards.
In the floorboards. Yeah, you can see or hear and partially see from the little bit of light.
Mm.
Several people walk towards the bar and then someone speaks, a older male Barovian voice. We are looking for Pip Mandarin. We know he is staying here. You hear Danica respond. He is not here. I have not seen him in some hours. Why? Is he wanted for something? The guard pauses for a moment and says, yes, he is wanted for murder and vandalism.
Murder? Oh, I did kill that guy.
Danica hesitates and says, yes, I expect very little of Pip, but this is even beneath that. The guard, after a moment, says, yeah, whatever.
Okay, that's good.
Well, if you see him, let us know. Do not attempt to inform him that we are looking for him, and do not allow him to escape. This is your last warning, Danica. The footfalls leave the tavern.
Okay, I'm going to wait for Danica to open the trapdoor. I'm not going to do it myself.
Danica returns, opens the trapdoor, and looking down at you says, what did you do?
I clamber out of the trapdoor. I mean, Danik, the moment I came back, it all just... I'm going to explain effectively the events of the day.
Danica gets paler and paler as you continue to explain.
If you, it's probably not good for me to be here at the Blue Water Inn. I can find somewhere else.
She shakes her head and says, you are safe nowhere else within this city. You must stay here.
Yeah, but you're not safe while I'm here.
She thinks on that for a moment. She, looking at you, looks you up and down, and you feel like she's trying to get a measure of you. She finally says, this should be a matter for me and my husband to decide. Wait here. She turns and walks away.
I guess I probably won't leave where I'm standing. It would feel weird to go sit down again, so...
Agogash ducks his head in... Yeah. Through the bar area. Is everything... Well, everything is not okay. I heard... Did you hear?
yeah, Ogogash, I heard.
Who did you kill?
I... before, when we arrived and I was in the cart, two of the ensorcelled people were attacking a third non-ensorcelled person, and I tried to, you know, make them leave with arrows, and unfortunately, well, one of them passed away.
Agurgash lets that sit for a moment, and then he nods and says, well, I want you to know that as hated as you are within this town, I have a lot of care for you, and I will not abandon a companion.
Thank you, Gogesh. That's very nice of you. But if I have to leave, then I'll just leave. I can stay on the outskirts of town or in the sewers, perhaps.
I don't think you'd be able to safely escape. It will be either staying here or death for you, he says. If I must, I will fight by your side. And as I would probably have to carry on your memory.
Like a long pause, and then like a
thanks, Agogesh. Very kind of you.
He returns to the bar. After he goes back to the bar, Danica and Irwin come into the back area with you. Irwin says, we have had the quick deliberation about what is going on. We think, at least for the time, that you should stay here, or at least that you should consider this place somewhere you can hide, until, at the very least, we understand the extent of how bad things are here for you. If the Burgomaster is willing to tear this town apart to find you, then we will smuggle you out. But if this is a passing thing or something that can be dealt with, you should stay within the city under our protection.
Thank you to the two. I mean, it's more than I deserve. So, yes, I'll do my best to make sure it's wrapped up.
Danica puts a hand on your shoulder and says, there is no point in keeping an organization that opposes Strahd secret if it does not, at the very least, sometimes oppose Strahd.
I give a tight-lipped smile. I think I need to get back to planning. See if I can wrap this up quickly.
They nod. Danica clears a table in the back area here for you and sets down a chair. You may work here.
Appreciated. Agogesh? Chaucer?
Agogesh and Chaucer enter. Danica takes one look at them and then starts clearing a bigger table.
Yeah.
All right. You sit there as one of the boys comes over and starts preparing vegetables and meat for cooking later tonight.
Yeah, no worries.
All right. At about this time, Hector, hi, Zalois.
Hi.
You get to the Blue Water Inn without any trouble.
Excellent.
You walk in. Danica's behind the bar. As soon as you step in, Danica gestures for you to come over.
Can I beeline to her?
Yes. Is this fun? She points at Yenda. Actually, maybe she just addresses Yenda. Yenda and Hector, have the two of you been in contact much today? You left separately, but Hector, you are wanted by the town guard.
That makes sense. All right. Yes, okay, I can see why. All right.
What did you do? Yender looks at you as well and says, what did you fucking do?
You see, the town guards seem to be, they're the ones, tongues.
I look at Yender.
Oh, right. The Burgomaster. Oh, fuck. Am I associated with this? Yenda says to Danica. Danica shakes her head and says, I do not think that they want you as well.
What about the frog?
Who is the child?
Right. This is Yeska. He needs to be... A lot has happened. Where's the dog?
A man walks up to the bar, leans over, quite clearly wishing to talk to Danica. Danica ignores your conversation immediately, leans forward and lets the man whisper into her ear. Do you try to eavesdrop?
Yeah.
You hear him whispering into Danica's ear, and the grung too. He leans back from the table, and as he's about to leave away, Danica stops him and gestures for him to come in again. She whispers into here, you... rolled enough. You can hear this conversation. Danica whispers back to him, the halfling, Yenda, do they want her as well? The man shakes his head and says, no, just the dragonborn, the angel man, and the little grung guy. He hops back, looks at you, Hector, and gives you a very determined nod. Like he kind of, you get the impression of like someone about to go into battle, basically.
Okay. All right.
He turns and walks away from the bar.
I
give him the same nod back, and then I go back to Danica. So this is...
Two of you, the Cribbit the Amazing, I am so sorry, but you are now a wanted criminal within this town.
You didn't realize, but Cribbit has switched from his book to a lute, and when you hear you are a wanted criminal in this town, you hear, ba-da-da-dung.
Oh, the little bard he was with his chosen story, but his story turns to a worry. Now I am wanted, but... will I survive?
As he does a little guitar solo.
Yeah, Cribbit.
It's... you hate how much you love it.
Kaufland bringt Frische in dein Leben. Mit mehr als 400 täglich frisch gelieferten Obst- und Gemüseartikeln. Mehr als 1500 frischen Molkereiprodukten direkt vom Erzeuger. Und zwar auch in Bio, laktosefrei, vegan und sogar in High-Protein. Dazu kommen knusprig frische Backwaren. Mehrmals täglich frisch aus dem Ofen. Außerdem herzhaft frisches Fleisch aus eigener Produktion und von ausgewählten Landwirten. Kaufland, hier bin ich richtig.